yeah, it seems quite extreme that it took the death of my father to decide I wanted to paint, you know, full time. But I think it was, as you say, it was just that a decision had to be made, and I was unhappy, and this was going to make me happy, you know. But I guess it's strange. You don't expect these situations to, well, you don't expect them to happen, but when they do, you don't know how you're going to react to something like that, you know, and odd that it did spur me on to do that.
Hi, I'm Bonsu.
I'm Bryn.
And I'm Nick, and this is Chalk It Up, a podcast that celebrates all things Sussex through stories and conversations with inspiring local people. This episode, we have the pleasure of talking with Lewes-based artist Mark Goodrum. Mark is a successful painter known for his cityscapes of London streets, where he lived for over 40 years before relocating with his young family to Sussex. Tonight, Mark speaks about life, music and art, the challenges of moving to Sussex, and how he's finding new inspiration in Brighton, Lewes and the surrounding Sussex landscape.
Well, to start from the beginning, I guess, I've always painted, always drawn, sketched, you know, when I was a kid. It was just the sort of thing I did. It was not the only thing I could do, but it was the one thing I sort of could do well, I guess, you know, or whatever. But so pursued it, did the art college thing and, you know, worked part-time to try and make things happen and realise how difficult it is to do this. Along the way, I did actually come away from art for a bit. So I did the college thing and then went into work and then got into music quite heavily and played the drums in a band for quite some time, for sort of the next 10 years. So art, it was always there, but I kind of sidelined it for a bit.
What was the name of your band?
Well, the first band was Baptiste, and then the second sort of incarnation was Kelman, stripped down version of the former band. It was with my brother. He was the singer, and he wrote all the songs, and then we'd sort of got musicians in from Enemy ads.
Yeah,
believe it or not, Melody Maker. It was that long ago.
Wow,
you know, pre-social media days, you know. I think when the band finished, MySpace had just come into play, so there's an indication as to how long ago it was. But we tried, you know, we spent most of our time trying to do this for sort of 10 years, realized it probably wasn't going to happen, and so I went back to art and decided to kind of pick it up again. And just, I was working in a sort of temp position and working part-time. But in that time, I was building up a sort of portfolio of work. And my job was getting increasingly sort of down and probably quite depressed at work. And having two separate lives. So I was working, you know, just to get money to pay rent and so on. And then I was trying this other thing to desperately build up this sort of body of work, you know. And it was great. The company I was at, actually, were really good. They were really nice people, and they did encourage me to sort of take the plunge, which I did. And I'm thinking back. It actually wasn't that long ago. My father passed away quite suddenly about 6 years ago. And it was at that point, so I was going to work, that had happened, and I was trying to kind of paint full time. So all of those three things they just blurred, and I had to make a decision. So I left the job, took the plunge and just left, and worked my backside off, really, to just make it happen. And I had work in a few galleries at that time as well, so I just kind of really built upon those relationships, and I did okay. I mean, it was quite lucky. I was selling the work I was giving them, so I was able to save money, and kind of fell into place. So actually, it hasn't been that long, since your question, since sort of doing it full time. It's probably been 6 years.
Okay. Yeah.
Prior to that, it was probably 10 years of just slogging away, you know.
What was it about your dad passing away that really inspired you to take the plunge? Was it the sort of jeopardy of realising your own mortality, or what was that?
That certainly comes into it. That certainly came into it afterwards, because for a brief period, that's all you can kind of think about. I mean, it still drips in now and again. It's certainly having my son, you know. It's hard to escape those thoughts. But at the time, I think I was so down at work, because it was a place I didn't really want to be. Mm. As I say, great folk there, but the essence of the work wasn't what I wanted to do. But so I was just in a sort of fairly dark place, and yeah, it seems quite extreme that it took the death of my father to decide I wanted to paint, you know, full time. But I think it was, as you say, it was just that a decision had to be made, and I was unhappy, and this was going to make me happy, you know. But I guess it's strange. You don't expect these situations you don't expect them to happen. But when they do, you don't know how you're going to react to something like that, you know. And odd that it did spur me on to do that, you know. I mean, it's a strange scenario, really. But
as a realisation of your own mortality when your parent dies.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it is. You know, you can't help thinking about time. Mm. It then seems to just rule everything, and you know, certainly, and as I say, you're having children and so on, then it's just a constant. It's there. Mm. The cloud shifts, it goes, but it will return, you know, and but it's an interesting one. But it needed to be done, so you know, it was a good decision.
Mm. I think what I draw from that is most of us have decisions to be made most of the times, and when you're unhappy about something, it does, you need to reach a point where you've had enough.
Yeah.
Something has to trigger. And I think, you know, you art was in you. You said, you know, from your early beginnings, that's all you know, that's what you wanted to do. So anything else that you were doing, you weren't getting fulfillment. And at that time, when unfortunately your father passed away, you kind of probably came to that. You said you've had enough.
Yeah, it does. It forces you to make decisions that you probably wouldn't have made. You know, you suddenly get a bit of ownership over your life, weirdly. Not that you're, I don't know, whether you're trying to live out your folks' aspirations of what they wanted you to do or whatever it may be. These might have been things in the past, you know. But certainly you feel then that you're a little more solo, and you know, even though I'm in my 40s, you know, an adult, but at the time you just, you know, you feel like you can handle this, and these decisions are now mine, and you know, they always were, but you just, it's amazing how you just sit on a sort of platform and just keep going until something happens, as you say, and you're sort of forced to make a decision. And in hindsight, why didn't I decide to do that 10 years previous? You know, why was I just doing this, you know? It's an interesting one.
I think there is an explanation for that. I mean, psychologically or neurotically, that people make those kind of decisions based on where they are and what happens to them. They have to reach a point, because we are constantly being challenged by, you know, your kind of logical thinking and your emotional thinking. And logically, you needed money to pay rent, and emotionally, you weren't with that particular sort of work. Emotionally, you were on your art side.
Yeah.
So I think maybe that's what I could draw from that.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think that's true. And there's also, because you've essentially lost something or someone, the element of risk, it's not so much of a risk then, because you've got a slightly different attitude. There's a sort of carefree, slightly more anarchic, like, I'm going to do this. It doesn't matter anymore. Mm. Who cares? Yeah. You know, if whatever the repercussions are, what does it actually matter? You know, it's that sort of attitude that creeps in a bit as well, you know. So, yeah, as I say, it was a good, well, it was good timing for me that I made that decision, because it changed my mental health again, you know, after something so severe. And then there was some sort of sunlight again, you know.
Mm. And how... So that is a really big plunge to sort of, you know, to go into it full time and to really give it that shot. Mm. How confident were you in your abilities at the time, and how confident are you in your abilities now, and how sort of confident were you that there was a chance to do that?
Well, I guess I was fairly confident in that I'd already formed a relationship with a gallery, or a couple of them. So I was feeding them work. And as I say, luckily for me, I was sort of selling the work I was given. So I'd sort of started to build up a little world of my art and what I wanted to do anyway. But it was treading water because I was juggling these two worlds, you know. So I was fairly confident, but you can never be too confident because, you know, you're selling art and it's incredibly hard to do because you're creating something that you're doing for yourself, but ultimately it's for your own thing, but you, who knows what's going to happen to it, you know. Mm. You don't know who's going to buy it, if anyone will, who is it for, why are you doing it? You know, so and now it's still, there's still that level of anxiety in something that should be very soothing, relaxing, that will always be there because of the unknown. You just don't know. You're doing these things and ultimately you've no idea where it's going to end up or if anywhere, you know. So it's a strange one. But so in answer to your question, I was fairly confident that I could take that leap.
Yeah.
And I sort of had a plan in my mind, you know, as to what I wanted to do and where I wanted to be with it. I'm always sort of thinking maybe three or four paintings ahead of the one I'm working on anyway. So essentially I'm trying to think a bit of ahead of the game. So there's always a bit of a safety net mentally, you know, because you've kind of mapped out the next little few steps.
Yeah.
So your plans, it's flowing as you're sort of painting, you know. So it's a fairly confident, but as I say, you can never be too confident.
But is that that sort of nervousness or that anxiety about you know how a future work will be received? Isn't that part of sort of knowing that what you're doing has artistic merit in it, because you're not just painting something that's completely safe and that you've sold elsewhere and you know will work? You're not repeating a formula. You're actually kind of trying something new.
Trying some, yeah, no, definitely it does. But the problem, I think most, well, anyone, any walk of life, really, the minute you start, the minute money starts to be involved and you're then selling something, and then you have a gallery who might be asking for work and you know, it you don't want it to change, but it changes. You know, there's a commercial element that starts tapping in, that wants to get in, and you're aware of it. And you have to acknowledge it, otherwise you're just going to be out at sea forever and hoping that someone might just float past, you know. So you've got to sort of take that on board a bit. You've got to let that in a little bit, I think. Mm-hmm. If you want to make a living from it, you have to think of the commercial aspect ever so slightly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I just think that's probably common sense as well, because as you say, any business or whatever it is, you're gonna have to consider being open a little, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, you see, I think with businesses, they have a product and then they commercialize it, demand, supply, they all kick in. And being an artist, you know, either you're a musician or an artist, a painter, whichever way, your work is your creativity. And it's basically, let's say, a musician being signed by, you know, sort of Simon Cowell and expecting hits and hits and hits over and over. You don't basically just churn the music straight to where you need to be in a space where you could create and be able to get those hits. And I think it's a, I don't really think I have that level of creativity in a sort of an art form, but I feel that maybe balancing the commercial aspect in your creativity can maybe slightly challenging, because like you said, you've got to make a living, but also you want to be able to create something that is meaningful to you, because you see a good art from yourself. You are your most critic, if you're worst critic, if you like.
Yeah.
So how do you balance that? How have you managed to balance the commercial and creativity, obviously, you know, within yourself?
I haven't had too much of a problem with it, if I'm completely honest. Everything I paint, aside from a personal commission for somebody, which I do a lot of, I'll always paint something that I believe will do something for someone, or, you know, I'm painting it for a reason. It's got to have certain ingredients and that make up what I feel is going to be a sort of, you know, a strong composition or whatever. But how do I balance it? I don't know. It's a tricky one because, as I say, it does creep in. But I think if you fight it, then you've probably got a bit of you'll have an issue. You'll be sort of locking horns with it all the time. So you've got to let some of the light in a bit, I think. And if you can just let some in and then just continue to sort of follow your vision, but be aware of how you may have to adapt now and again, ever so slightly. But it might not be the physical painting that you're adapting. It might be a relationship with maybe a gallery or clients. It might be how you conduct yourself outside of the realm of painting. That might be the point of adapting a little and compromise, because you're having to have conversations that you might not want to have, or you're not comfortable naturally talking about selling a painting, you know. So that's probably the bigger test, outside of the studio or outside of, you know, physically drawing, you know. So it can come in different forms, I guess, you know.
And what are the ingredients of a picture?
Of a painting?
of one of your paintings? You don't have to tell us if you don't want to.
Oh, no, I mean, there's a few. Personally speaking, it's I would say there's got to be an element of drama. So it could be some light or shadow play. There's got to be, obviously, contrasts of light and dark. I would say there's got to be a hint of sort of romance in there. I don't mean that in a sort of cliched way. It could be, you know, it could be anything. The light across a hedge or a fence, or, you know, there's got to be something going on in that picture. There's got to be different elements that sort of work together to make it harmonious, the colours, the tones. And obviously the composition has to look right, you know. There's got to be the correct perspective and all of those things. So there's a few rules, really, but that's why you map out first and you sketch and work it out, and, you know. But every painting, I would say the light and dark element is key. I think that's what adds the drama to a painting, you know.
It's interesting you say about the romance, because when you look at your paintings, you... it's always extremely flattering, and it's usually a building, right?
Yes,
and you can tell, like, you love the building.
Yeah,
that,
right.
That really comes through.
Okay, oh, that's interesting.
And also, it's interesting what you say about the drama, because when you look at it, I mean, it just looks like the building, but you're looking at it, but it's like, I don't know, it's like some... It's if you were painting a person, it would be just the most flattering photo.
Yeah.
Flattering painting of a person. Somehow you do it with a building.
Well, exactly.
It's fucking awesome. It's really, really, really...
I mean, I think buildings deserve... they deserve our attention, you know, and they command it. You know, when you walk through a city, even if it's a quiet, sparse city or whatever, it's designed in a way you navigate through, and certain buildings are there for reasons, and they stop you in your tracks, and, you know, you can look at them and fall in love with them, or you can just walk past and not even realise they're there. But for someone who likes buildings and architecture, I get so much pleasure out of finding a building that I think I'd like to paint, and then I put it in the right context and the right drama and the right setting, almost like a sort of film noir thing, you know. And that's kind of what Edward Hopper used to do. So he would be influenced by those sort of films, and his painting would then, he'd achingly work out what he could do. I'm not comparing myself to him, by the way, for one minute, but I like his painting, so he's kind of, you know, but he would work all of those things out, all those elements that would make a final painting sort of sing, you know.
It's a moment, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
You capture a
moment. A little moment in time.
The light will never quite be the same as it is for that moment.
Yeah, and it's then if the viewer can find something in it that triggers something for them emotionally or a memory or, you know, that's great. Then I feel I've sort of achieved kind of what I set out to do, you know.
And is that how you find your inspiration? Is it through walking?
Oh, definitely, yes, yeah.
And looking?
I don't drive, and I, you know, I've just got the bike thing. Still call it a bike thing. forgot the lock, you know, kind of can never work the lock out. So I shouldn't be on the road. I should be on the pavement. I think it's safe to say. I walk everywhere. I think that's the key to discovering a town like Lewis that's, you know, moving here. The only true way of exploring somewhere is by just walking it on foot, you know, and preferably on your own, because you can then just go wherever you want to and take those wrong turns and, you know. So, yeah, I'm always out walking and sketching, and, you know, that is how I'd find.
And so you'd sketch, photograph?
Yeah, sketch and photograph.
And then you'd go back at another time of day?
Yeah, I do, yeah, definitely. I'd always go back. And I mean, I could even just be on a bus and see something and then think, oh, gosh, that was interesting back there. Because I'll always make sketches, but I photograph an awful lot. I just take photos of everything now, because there's always something you can find in a picture. So, or if I've drawn something and that doesn't quite work, if you then zoom into an area, a focus of, say, just a window, that might have so much more going on just on its own, that lonesome window with a net curtain or whatever, than the rest of it did, you know, then that could speak volumes, you know. So, yeah, there's always something to find, you know, but essentially walking, yeah.
So have you been inspired by other cities outside London that that are as iconic as London?
Oh,
that you think?
I mean, yeah, definitely. New York would be the obvious one for me. I really did love going back to New York each year. We kind of had a fascination with it and just went back every year, but probably 6 or 7 years in a row we were going back. And yeah, New York's great. That has the same qualities as London, I think, for me, you know. It just seems, New York just seems like they get it right every day. The work ethic in the morning, I remember just watching it just early in the morning, just going to get a coffee and just watching the UPS guy, the post guy, the guy sweeping the street, someone opening their shop, someone coming out of their apartment. Everyone communicated. And I used to think, wow, they've so much respect for, it doesn't matter what you're doing. Yes. Those streets are going to be clean. Those bins are all emptied. And that UPS guy is emptying his van. Everyone had absolute respect for each other to get that city working and suddenly breathing. And then the day starts, you know. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, that's incredible. And London doesn't really have that, you know. That was impressive, how they get the thing started, yeah. The city, get the day going and get that motor working, you know. It's impressive.
And did you find that coming through in the paintings that you were doing in New York? Or did you find yourself painting in a different way in New York than you did in London?
Not really. I didn't, because I made a few paintings in New York, but lots of drawings. They were sort of little whirlwind trips, so not really devoting the time at that point in my life to concentrating on painting the city. But it's certainly something I want to do. We might be going back this year, so I'll concentrate on it then, you know. But Paris as well, I mean, slightly cliched locations, but again, Paris has got the drama and every street corner tells a story, you know. It's these are sort of incredible places, really. Lisbon, I really loved. Mm-hmm. Lisbon, I thought, was fantastic. Similar qualities again, yeah. You know.
Yeah. So it's much more old European cities.
Yeah.
Which kind of give you the story.
Exactly, yeah. I'm not too much of a fan of the sort of blending of two worlds, the glass and old sort of, you know, architecture.
Right.
It's got to happen. I appreciate that it does have to happen, but I prefer to draw and paint sort of, you know, older buildings, really.
So if you were to educate, you know, sort of people who haven't, because art is a very, very large kind of, I think, not, you know, I certainly love art, but I don't understand it as much. So you know, there are some arts that you could spend, you know, millions and millions of pounds for, and there are some art that, you know, you see and you're like, this is absolutely beautiful. You know, this will fit over here. So I think someone said to me that art is about what inspires you, and what you see in the art is different from what you may see. So in a way, when you are making, when you're being creative, do you have the end user or whoever would like this that actually in mind? Are you trying to portray a message that is obvious, or?
That's a good question. You kind of, it's a bit similar to what we were talking about earlier. I think with art, it's essential that you create your own world so your work fits somewhere. Whether you're selling work to huge galleries or overseas clients, or you're just doing it on your own and starting out or whatever, your work has to fit somewhere for your own sort of mental state. You've got to let your work live and breathe in a comfortable place. So you create your own world, then you sort of build on that. It's a bit like trying to work on your style. I remember at art college, the tutors would always say, this is great, but let's start to see a style develop. And you know, that's essential. You have to then, because that's how your work will be, you know, seen and stand out as, you know, with everyone else's. And so you've got to sort of make your work, as I say, sit somewhere, but in your own world. So you're playing by your own rules a bit. So your work's accepted in your own headspace. That allows you to create a bit more and feel comfortable what you're doing. And then as time goes on, if you start to sell work, you start to nurture those people who are interested in paintings of buildings, for argument's sake, you know. So you realise that those are the people who might be interested in what you're doing. So you're not really changing or having those clients in mind. You're in an ideal world, they're sort of coming to you and you're keeping the fires burning. you're still doing what you're doing, but you're just bringing more people in to sort of view your work. And that's through the obvious channels now, you know, social media things. It's so easy to now put a picture on whatever, Twitter and stuff, and it will do the rounds, and, you know, so yeah, I mean, it's, again, there's a little element of being smart, you know, but ultimately I think it's just trying to nurture people to and holding on to your sort of
style.
Yeah, well, the whole, yeah, keeping your style, definitely, but not being afraid to evolve a little bit, but you know, yeah, just trying to keep at some sort of client base, if that's the position you're in, where you're selling work, you know. Yeah, it sounds like it's all money, but it's not. But I'm just, it's the money thing is just this sort of annoying practical side of it that creeps in, as I said earlier, you know. But it's not about that, really.
it does help somehow, like you said, too. But at the same time, I believe that what you're saying is, being a, you know, as creative, you focus on your creativity, and you would have hoped that will find space in someone else's.
Mm. No, exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's a bit like, I guess, making music. You know, you're going to... Bless you. Cheers. You're going to continue to do your thing, aren't you? You know, you're going to... if you've got an audience that might be interested and are coming to gigs or buying your records or whatever it might be, you know, you're still... continue to do that. You're not, you know, you won't sort of change. You may over time, but it's a hard one. I think, as I said, the most difficult thing is when you do start to sell work, you're then conscious of all of these things, you know. It does have a place in there, you know.
How did you settle on buildings? Were you drawing, painting other stuff first? By the time you got to art college, had you focused in on that, or was it whilst at college, art college, or after that?
I think it was from a young age, really. I was always doing pen and ink drawings of buildings. I remember, you know, when I was really small, and I think just family holidays, just sort of, you know, places in the UK, and I could just remember just driving in the car and just always looking out of the window and just enjoying looking at buildings, you know. I mean, they're fascinating, and particularly historic buildings, you know. Which is why Lewis is so great, you know, moving here. It's been quite incredible, really. But, yeah, buildings have always sort of been there.
And what brought you to Lewis?
Wow, gosh. Well, I've lived in London for, 45 years, so all my life. Lived in all four corners of London. That's my home, you know. It will always be home. But I think a change is good. I think, aside from sort of, you know, our domestic reasons in my little small family unit, you know, reasons to get some fresh air and live closer to the sea and all those sort of, you know, all the cliched things again. For me, I think as a painter, it's essential that you can change your environment. You know, it's painters did move around. If you had the luxury of traveling, they did, you know. I don't have that luxury, but that's what painters did. You know, I can't go off to Europe and paint for 2 months and then just drift back into life here. You know, it's not going to happen. But I think changing an environment is essential, you know, and it's a refreshing thing to do. So we you know, Lewis was always sort of, Brighton was always on the map, I should say. But Lewis was mentioned a few times to us and you know, we were advised to go and have a look at Lewis, and I think you'll like it, you know. And we did, came here, and I really love it. You know, it's an amazing place. It's, yeah,
Are there any particular places or buildings or areas that you've already seen perhaps in your walks and that you're thinking that is going to, you know, is it inspiring you? What's inspiring you about Lewes? Oh,
it
definitely,
it really is. I mean, the day we visited, I still sort of have to pinch myself a bit walking around here because I'm still amazed at what the town looks like and everything about it. I mean, there's obviously the castles and how it cascades down, how the town was built, you know, and the houses, sort of how they're set, especially up on the edge of the downs. And it's such a sort of soothing town to navigate through, Lewes. It's obviously very picturesque. And I don't know, every corner you turn, there's something else, you know, I'm discovering. And the town itself, the people here, have been great. And there's a definite spirit through the town, I think, that people have in Lewes, you know. But no, that it's there's many ideas for future paintings here. I mean, I sketch a lot around the town and so on. And I've made a few paintings of Lewes, but I've got a sort of master plan that I want to do this year. Yeah, so I've got lots.
Sounds
of
like you're keeping it under your hat for the moment.
No, not really. No, I mean, the next opportunity might be the ArtWave open house thing. So my plan will be to get a body of work. I'd like to sort of capture the atmosphere of Lewes if I can, yeah. You know, capture the spirit of it. And a lot of that will be probably at night because it's quite amazing at night, Lewes, but yeah, if I can just get a body of work together and you know, that's my plan.
Would you exhibit at home or would you say go to a pub? I mean, you could exhibit at the Abyss if they haven't got anyone there. That would be awesome.
Oh, can you
do
that? Oh, okay.
I'm sure. I mean, yeah. The Abyss boys are up for anything, aren't they?
Oh, are they really? Yeah. Yeah.
It's just as long as the paintings don't get like nicked or damaged.
Yeah, no, true.
It's not that raucous.
Clean film there. Over them.
Yeah.
The plan would be to do it at home. But now you mentioned that, I might look into having a venue, actually. Mm. Yeah.
Well, you might catch some people there that aren't doing the trails, because people will come to Lewes and sort of the surrounding area.
No, exactly, yeah, yeah.
On those trails, I mean, people would still go to the Abyss on a trail, but it would sort of give them new punters there, but you'd be able to
exhibit
to people. And I think the people that go to the Abyss would love your paintings as well. So
that's interesting. Yeah, I hadn't considered that. I just had thought, oh, okay, well, I'll open up my house and do some sort of setup there. But probably makes more sense using a venue, actually. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a freebie from the podcast.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Brighton.
Yes,
I know we are talking about Lewes, but certainly there is a connection between Lewes and Brighton in terms of people that move from London and having that sort of a city kind of closer to them as well. What sort of inspiration have you? I mean, I know I've seen you painted some really good Brighton, you know, sort of iconic.
Yeah,
you know,
I've painted a fair bit in Brighton, actually. It's a place I've always known very well. We used to go there as kids and, you know, my folks would drive there. So we went, you know, every month we would drive down to Brighton. So I know it really well. And the light in Brighton is incredible. You know, it's a lovely seaside town and just the seafront is great. Promenade and, you know, there's, just a lot of history in Brighton. And I've always had a lot of fun down in Brighton, you know. But that, as I say, that was our first sort of move out of London. That was the spot we were thinking of heading to. But I'm happy we came to Lewes.
Good, good.
What's the strangest thing you've found about living in Lewes?
Oh, gosh, the strangest thing, yes. The Bonfire Night is great, and I wouldn't say that is strange at all. I mean, people have said, oh, you'll go down and experience the Bonfire Night, it's crazy, and I just thought it was really great and really well organised.
Coming from London, yeah.
They have a big thing right outside your house.
It started there, and I was just thinking, oh, this is great. This is really well organised. Great crowd control. No things being thrown around. This is where I don't know what all the fuss is about. This is excellent. But no, the strangest experience so far, which has only been 6 months or whatever, I think it was 2 weeks into moving here. And we live quite close to the Lewis Arms, just around the corner. And it was a Saturday morning, and yeah, we'd only been here for 2 weeks, like I say. And I found myself outside the Lewis Arms sort of drinking down in pints and like midday, and then throwing the peas down the alleyway. Sort of just suddenly involved in a pea-throwing competition.
It's the Wells pea-throwing competition.
Yeah, exactly. And that was quite odd. But it was good. It was great. And at first we were thinking, well, what's this? What's happening? And, you know, then the next minute I was sort of demanding another pea because mine's perished as I threw it through the air. Can I have another pea, please? This didn't work. Really sort of getting competitive, you know. We're only allowed two throws, but, you know.
They're great, these little traditions that these towns have. You know, Hastings has a few as well.
Yeah. Okay.
You have to ride. There's the steepest hill in Hastings. It's about 80 metres, and you have to ride up it on an old butcher's bike with a £5 note under your bum. And the idea being that you can't stand up because you lose it. If you get to the top, you get the fiver.
Yeah. That's great.
That's outside a pub and everybody's drinking.
Yeah, I mean, all of these things have to involve a pub, really, don't they?
Yeah.
I can't imagine them outside.
It must have been invented after a day at the pub.
Yeah. Have you done that then? Have you been on the bike?
Yeah, I didn't make it
to the
top.
Didn't clench had a few pints. Enough.
They always make sure you have some pints before you go
some
up.
Some people practice, you can tell. Yeah.
Right, okay. Yeah. Now, there are quite a few in Lewis, aren't there? What's the origin behind the pea throwing then? I didn't even inquire into... I was just throwing them. I have no idea. Why.
I think they're just doing it. It's just a peculiarity. So in
it's not a sport, is it?
It's not internationally recognised.
It's not in the Olympics.
It's not, not the Olympics yet. Well, there's a pub in Cooksbridge that has. Have you ever seen Toads? The game Toads. You have that sort of square box, and you have these brass coins. You have to throw them in. So they have the World Toad Championship there. So I'm guessing that some bright spark from the Lewis Arms has thought, well, you want to do a bit of that, we can do something along those lines as well. But they also have a dog show. Was it an oh no? It's either like a dog show or an animal running costume.
Oh really?
Yeah, running race. They used to have at the Snowdrop the alternative Miss World, which is quite good. So it was like dudes dressing up as and doing a sort of a burlesque type act, and that was hilarious. That was brilliant in the middle of the day, just a very rustic stage made out of planks of wood and beer crates and stuff like that. This one lad Ben did the poorest Hastings and Turner performance, but very 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 good fun,
good entertainment.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So yeah, a lot of pubs do fun stuff like that.
Yeah, no, the Snowdrop. I do remember the little dog show. Yeah, not, they weren't dressed up. These were just
real dogs.
Yeah, real dogs.
Disappointing.
No clothing at all. Just dogs. Just parading them around. Yeah. But, there seems like there's a lot of these little traditions in Lewis. But I like it. I think that's a good thing. I think people seem really proud of this town.
Mm.
You know, and obviously there's a sort of their own set of rules here, and there's a... You know, it's a bit otherworldly as well, Lewis. I find it, you know, there's something kind of different, which is great, you know.
Yeah.
And when my friends have come up to visit, they've all said the same. It's sort of, they've left, they've gone back to town, back to London, and it's sort of haunted them a bit. You know, look, they can't quite get it out of their minds, you know. They said, something about Lewis, that place, it keeps bugging me.
Must be on a ley line or something like that.
I've
always thought it would be really good for a setting of a Twin Peaks style murder. Like a really horrific pagan ritualistic.
Well, get David Lynch, you know, involved up here, No, it's great though. I do like the town a lot.
Favourite bit at the
favorite
moment?
Bit
is there anything that you've recently discovered that you feel like, it's great, you know.
Back to our earlier point, really, of just walking and just exploring the town. I mean, where I live, it's good exercise. Exactly. I was running around the paddock the other night, actually. It's quite good. But where I live, coming out of our house, and I would walk up New Road. So if I was to bring someone here, you know, I would take them up, start of New Road, and either, I think, Castle Bank. Then you can walk through the mouth of the castle, obviously. Yeah. So if you didn't want to take that sort of the more tourist route, I tend to go up New Road, and then you come to a little lodge and some steps going up to Pipe Passage, you know, there. Yeah. And then obviously you've got the roundhouse Virginia Woolf had owned, you know, which is great. I don't think she lived there, but a lovely, unusual sort of house. And then between these two houses opposite, you can see the castle in all its glory right here. Mm. Then you've got the obviously this little Pipe Passage, and it's just incredible. And then out onto the High Street, and then you've got, you know, Thomas Paine's house.
Bull House, yeah.
Yes, mm. yeah. Lovely 15th century, sort of suitably decrepit house. And then I would go down maybe Keir Street, is it?
Yeah.
And then over to Southover, which I think Southover is incredible. I mean, I'm still amazed at that part of the town, particularly at night. Mm. And just along Southover High Street, I think, is that right? Where the Grange is. And then up towards the Swan Inn. So I would... All roads lead to the Swan Inn for me at the moment. Again, if we have
not bad
people over, okay. Come on, let's go to the Swan Inn. I'll show you this amazing pub.